Well, here we are at the end of Genesis. We've stopped to see some of the most iconic stories in the Old Testament. And today we reach our grand finale, the final chapter. And it is another dysfunctional family drama. Look, I don't know if the biblical writer of Genesis got sidetracked or got some pressure to get ratings up with a juicy soap opera, but you've got to admit that ending a story of Joseph the dreamer, who was beloved by his father Jacob while hated by his brother, sold into slavery, is not exactly how you might imagine a book that started with, "In the beginning, God created," to end. Joseph's story takes up 13 chapters of Genesis. 10 of those chapters cover just 20 years of Joseph's life. Not even his great-grandfather, Abraham, got that kind of detailed coverage. Joseph's life is a story that tends to capture the imagination. And after all, it was worthy of a Broadway musical with Donny Osmond, and we were able to hear a song from that musical last week. And I must confess, I love the music to that show, and it is far more kid-friendly than what the real Bible says. The actual biblical account reads a lot more like an HBO drama. And I have to say, at the heart of it all, this final cycle of stories in Genesis about a band of brothers who are struggling to grow up, recognize that they are ones who have been blessed as the great-grandsons of Abraham, and they're called to be a blessing to the entire world, but it's like they haven't quite learned how to control their power. So they enter into a brooding, vicious, drama-filled cycle, complete with deceit, envy, fear, treachery, remorse, until these boys learn how to grow up and become men of the promise. So let's introduce Joseph one more time. When we first met him last week, he was only 17 years old, and as I mentioned, he was Dad's favorite, one of the youngest, predisposed to tattling, rather brash about his talents, with a propensity to brag about his dreams of greatness, and of course, his brothers hated him for it. To make things more complicated, we have to remember that Joseph and his 11 other brothers were sons of Jacob, and Jacob, as Steve pointed out, was quite a trickster in his prime, known to pull a few cons and use deceit to get what he wanted. So here we have the next generation, 12 young men, a lot of egos, a dad whose past has taught them that pulling a few con jobs can sometimes pay off in the end. So it's not surprising that Joseph's brothers choose to deal with their jealousy by doing what they've learned, and they take the worst parts of their old man, his trickster nature, and escalate the family business into something ugly and dangerous. The brothers, out of their jealousy, we learn in Genesis, sell Joseph into slavery. And they lie to their father, tricking him into believing he was killed by a wild animal. Yet through it all, even in slavery, Joseph was able to rise to power. Even when he was thrown unfairly into prison, he was still able to find a way up, eventually helping to run the jail. And because of his incredible giftedness in both leadership and interpreting dreams, he finds himself eventually helping Pharaoh run the country, a second in command at the ripe old age of 30. Did you know that when Joseph rose to power, Pharaoh gave him a new name? It was Zaphnath-Paneah. But who can say that three times fast? So I'm just going to keep calling him Joe. So soon after getting his new job, Pharaoh also helps Joseph find a wife. Joseph starts life in a new land, gets married, has a kid, and through watching over Egypt, carefully storing grain, he finds a way to live out great-grandpa Abe's calling. Maybe not in the way he dreamed it to be, but the blessings come. And Joseph has 7 years to live in this new position of power. He becomes a respected man with more power than most of us could dream of. He was an honored man who held lives in his hands because he was the one in charge of the granaries. And just at a point where Joseph has made a new successful life, a moment where he hits the height of his power, this is where famine hits and his past comes seeking him. You see, when Joseph is 37 years old, 20 years after that initial betrayal by his brothers, famine hits the lands of Egypt and Canaan. Egypt has more than enough to withstand the famine, thanks to Joe. But Canaan does not. And who lives in Canaan? Joseph's family. His family is starving, and so Jacob, his father, sends his sons to buy food in Egypt. Only Joseph's beloved brother, Benjamin, stays behind. Joseph's brothers have no idea that Joseph is there, much less the guy in charge. They've come simply looking for food, and they come to talk to some Egyptian guy named Zaphnath-Paneah. And this is the one who controls the granaries. Well, we know that's really Joseph. And Joseph is no longer a boy. His brothers may not recognize him, but Joseph has not forgotten who they are. And although he may be second in command of Egypt, I can only imagine that for Joseph, when he saw his brothers, there must have still been a part of that 17-year-old boy left inside of him. Probably angry, confused, maybe even a little bit scared from his past. And I find it fascinating that even though Joseph has found an incredible amount of power and status in his new life, he still falls into these patterns of the family system using trickery, disguises, and deceit to test his brothers. You see, when Joseph's brothers arrive and ask for food, Joseph accuses them of being spies. He throws them in jail, or as the Bible says, a pit, for 3 days. And while the brothers are stuck there, stewing in their time out, even they begin to realize that their sins of the past are beginning to come to haunt them. Check out chapter 42 to read more about that. Now on the third day when they're released, well, all but one. You see, Simeon is kept in the pit. Joseph instructs them to come back with their youngest brother, if they want this one freed, and sends them grain to feed their entire family. And to add the strangeness to this story, when the boys get back to dear old dad, it takes Jacob 2 years to send the boys back to Egypt with dear little Benny. That means for 2 years, Simeon is stuck sitting in a pit, waiting for rescue. And you get the sense when you read through Genesis that the only reason Jacob actually even sends them back is because they ran out of food and he has no other choice. So after the 2 years have passed and the brothers come back with Benjamin, the brothers still have no idea that this guy is really Joe. And you get a sense from the writing that Joseph is not sure what to make of his brothers either. After all, they were in no hurry to help Simeon. But they did come back and keep their word eventually. So Joseph pulls one last test to see where things are really at. And we get the sense that this final trap will determine how the story ends. Joseph loads the caravan up with grain, and he has someone hide his silver goblet in Benjamin's bag, so that he can accuse dear little Benny of stealing and see how the family will respond. Well, the trap is set, and sure enough, Benjamin is found with the cup. Things are looking pretty grim for Ben. But the family is not the same as they were 20 years ago. Not even the same as they were 2 years ago. Judah, the oldest brother, accepts the responsibility of the crime and is willing to take on Benjamin's punishment of slavery. Judah, the very same brother responsible for selling Joseph into slavery 20 years ago, now freely offers himself as a slave to Joseph in order to save Benjamin's life. The family system has changed. And Joseph, we learn, breaks down into tears. Joseph, who is now in a position of power himself, chooses to end the cycle of violence when he sees that his brothers are choosing another way. And it is at this point in the story, in chapter 20, in 45, where we hear Joseph saying, "I am your brother Joseph, he whom you sold into Egypt. Do not be distressed or reproach yourselves because you sold me. It was to save life that God sent me ahead of you." And then the story culminates with Joseph bringing his family to Egypt. He saves their lives by giving them food and land, using his power to make a new way for his family. And after the family has settled in Egypt, years go on, and eventually Jacob dies. And the book of Genesis ends with these words from Joseph to his brothers. Joseph says, "Don't be afraid. Am I God? You planned something bad for me, but God produced something good from it in order to save the lives of many people, just as he's doing today. Now don't be afraid. I will take care of you and your children." Don't be afraid. Am I God? You planned something bad for me, but God produced something good from it. I think we walk on very tender ground when we reflect on these final words of Genesis. And I want to lift up just a few points for us to reflect and chew on as we think about these sacred words. First of all, when we think about verses 19 and 20 that I just read, I think it's important for us to remember that Joseph's words are meant to convey his particular journey and his situation, because his story is a part of a larger historical narrative of how people found themselves on a journey. Joseph's story links the journey of the Israelites on the move from Canaan to Egypt. Secondly, when Joseph speaks these words to his brothers, he speaks it from a position of great power and authority, at a time in his life where he is second in command of all of Egypt. And I think that position of power makes all the difference. And it's what we need to keep as the main lens of our interpretations. Because without understanding power and without remembering the context of these words, the phrase, "God produced something good from it," or as other translations sometimes write, "God meant it for good," can be quickly twisted and warped, creating strange theologies where suffering is meant for good or even God's will. But the Bible has countless passages that speak against that kind of view. And that's why it's so important to understand the larger biblical narrative, to listen to the prophets and Jesus who repeatedly speak against unjust suffering, for the biblical witnesses that over and over again call us to speak up against cycles of violence. Well, let's get back to what I think Joseph's story is trying to say here, and get specifically into those words of "God produced something good from it." Well, at the heart of this final narrative cycle in Genesis, I believe we are given a story about a journey that young brothers take on the road to becoming men and a nation, of how they are able to face the demons of their past, of how they have wounds that need healing, and how each of them are given opportunities to claim their own power when their time comes and make something that is even messy and broken good once more. In this final cycle of stories in Genesis, we are shown the power of Joseph, and we are also shown the power of Judah, his brother. because it takes both of them to lead a new way forward, to change their family system and impact the future of their own people as they become the nation of Israel. Judah, the one who finally grows up and claims responsibility of the eldest, realizing that he is the leader of his brothers, recognizes that he has made mistakes in the past. He has an opportunity to change the future. Judah, the eldest brother, is the first to choose a new way. And he chooses, with the use of his power, the way of the suffering servant, taking on his brother's punishment upon himself, using his power to save his family and do something good for them, to undo the wrongs he had done in the past. And we also have the power of Joseph, a man who has learned over the years how to grow into being a wise, responsible leader, who learns how to overcome his adversity and transform pain into possibility. Repeatedly, Joseph's life shows that although we may not be able to control where we are placed, we do have power to do all the good we can wherever we are. And we also learn in this story that the power of Joseph and the power of Judah is to become someone who believes it is possible for others to grow up and change as well. And that although it may take a series of tests or trust-building moments to see if the change is real, that even in the testing, even in the waiting, we can have grace to help and to hold as best as we can, to see if maybe, just maybe, we may be able to make some goodness come out of even the messiest of situations. The story of Joseph and his brothers is a story that speaks to power. After we have been wounded, cheated, and deceived, after we have been even been the perpetrators of violence ourselves, Richard Rohr says, pain that is not transformed is transmitted. And the hope of Joseph's story is that pain can be transformed, not simply transmitted. And that's how God's grace can help us to make things good again. And this is the strange, tender truth of the book of Genesis, that sometimes goodness breaks, but through the grace of God, the worst thing is never the last thing. God is constantly trying to help us make the best out of a broken situation, helping us grow, helping us step out of the cycles of violence, pride, greed, and envy, helping us find a way of true power that brings blessing and goodness, so that we may have a life of abundance, not abuse, so that we may have a life of empowerment that lifts others up, not domination based on fear tactics. In the book of Genesis, we learn that God is always trying to redeem and heal, bringing order out of chaos, so that all may be good. This is what we learn from the beginning.